Chapter 11. In the following 2 years, Sean and Garrick made the change from child to young manhood. It was like riding a strong current, being swept with speed along the river of life. There were parts of the river that flowed steadily. Ada was one of these, always understanding, with the ability to give her understanding expression, unchanging in her love for her husband and the family she had taken as her own. Waite was another, a little more grey in his hair, but big as ever in body, laugh and fortune. There were parts of the river that ran faster. Garrick's reliance on Sean. He needed him more strongly each month that passed, for Sean was his shield. If Sean wasn't there to protect him when he was threatened, then he used his final refuge. He crawled back into himself, into the warm, dark mists of his mind. They went to steal peaches. The twins, Carl, Dennis, and two others. There was a thick hedge around Mr. Pye's orchard, and the peaches that grew on the other side of it were as big as a man's fist. They were as sweet as honey, but tasted even sweeter when taken on the plunder account. You reach the orchard through a plantation of wattle trees.
"Don't take too many off one tree," Sean ordered. "Old Pye will notice as sure as anything."
They came to the hedge, and Sean found the hole.
"Gary, you stay here and keep cats for us. If anyone comes, give a whistle."
Garrick tried not to show his relief. He had no stomach for the expedition. Sean went on,
"We'll pass the peaches out to you, and don't eat any until we've finished."
"Why doesn't he come with us?" asked Carl.
"'Cause he can't run, that's why. If he gets caught, they'll know who the rest of us are for sure, and we'll all get it."
Carl was satisfied. Sean went down on his hands and knees and crawled into the hole in the hedge, and one at a time the others followed him until Garrick was left alone. He stood close to the hedge, drawing comfort from its protecting bulk. The minutes dragged by, and Garrick fidgeted nervously. They were taking an awfully long time. Suddenly there were voices. Someone was coming through the plantation towards him. Panic beat up inside him, and he shrank back into the hedge, trying to hide. The idea of giving a warning never even entered his head. The voices were closer, and then through the trees he recognized Ronnie Pye. With him were two of his friends. Each of them was armed with a slingshot, and they walked with their heads thrown back, searching the trees for birds. For a time it seemed they wouldn't notice Garrick in the hedge, but then, when they had almost passed, Ronnie turned his head and saw him. They stared at each other, 10 paces apart. Garrick crouched against the hedge, and Ronnie's expression of surprise slowly changed to one of cunning. He looked around quickly to make sure that Sean was not there.
"It's old Hobbledehoy," he announced,
and his friends came back and stood on each side of him.
"What are you doing, Pegleg?"
"Rat's got your tongue, Pegleg."
"No, Termite's got his leg."
Laughter aimed to hurt.
"Talk to us, Pegleg."
Ronnie Pye had ears that stood out on each side of his head like a pair of fans. He was small for his age, which made him vicious, and his hair was ginger.
"Come on, talk to us, Pegleg."
Garrick moistened his lips with his tongue. Already there were tears in his eyes.
"Hey, Ronnie, make him walk for us like this." One of the others gave a graphic imitation of Garrick's limp.
Again laughter, louder now, more confident, and they closed in on him.
"Show us how you walk."
Garrick swung his head from side to side, searching for an escape.
"Your brother's not here," crowed Ronnie. "No good looking for him, Pegleg."
He caught a hold of Garrick's shirt and pulled him out of the hedge.
"Show us how you walk."
Garrick plucked ineffectually at Ronnie's hand.
"Leave me. I'll tell Sean. I'll tell Sean unless you leave me."
"All right. I'll leave you," agreed Ronnie, and with both hands shoved him in the chest. "Don't come my way. Go that way." Garrick stumbled backwards. One of the others was ready for him. "Don't come my way. Go that way," and pushed him in the back. They formed a ring around him and kept him staggering between them. "Go that way. Go that way." The tears were streaking down his cheeks now.
"Please, please stop. Please, please," they mimicked him.
Then, with a rush of relief, Garrick felt the fluttering start behind his eyes. Their faces dimmed. He hardly felt their hands upon him. He fell, and his face hit the ground. But there was no pain. Two of them stooped over to lift him, and there was dirt mixed with the tears on his cheeks. Sean came through the hedge behind them. The front of his shirt bulged with peaches. For a second he crouched on his hands and knees while he took in what was happening. Then he came out of his crouch at a run. Ronnie heard him, dropped Garrick, and turned.
"You've been pinching Pa's peaches," he shouted. "I'll tell!"
Sean's fist hit him on the nose, and he sat down. Sean swung towards the other two, but they were already running. He chased them a few paces, then came back for Ronnie. But he was too late. Ronnie was dodging away between the trees, holding his face, and his nose was bleeding onto his shirt.
"Are you all right, Gary?"
Sean knelt beside him, trying to wipe the dirt off his face with a grubby handkerchief. Sean helped him to his feet, and Garrick stood swaying slightly, with his eyes open, but a remote and vacant smile on his lips. There were landmarks along the course of this river, some of them small as a pile of rocks and shallow water. Wade Courtney looked at Sean across the breakfast table at the Unis Corral. The fork load of egg and grilled gammon stopped on its way to his mouth. "Turn your face towards the window," he commanded suspiciously. Sean obeyed. "What the hell is that on your face?"
"What?"
Sean ran his hand over his cheek.
"When did you last bath?"
"Don't be silly, my dear."
Ada touched his leg under the table.
"It isn't dirt. It's whiskers."
"Whiskers, are they?"
Waite peered closely at Sean and started to grin. He opened his mouth to speak, and Ada knew instantly that he was going to make a joke. One of those ponderous jokes of his, as subtle as an enraged dinosaur, that would wound Sean deep in his half-formed manhood. Quickly she cut in.
"I think you should buy him a razor, don't you, Wait?"
Wait lost the thread of his joke. He grunted and put the egg into his mouth.
"I don't want to cut them,"
said Sean, and flushed scarlet.
"They'll grow quicker if you shave them a little at first," Ada told him.
Across the table from her, Garrick fingered his jowls wistfully. Some of the landmarks were big as headlands. Wade fetched them from school at the beginning of the December holidays. In the confusion of loading their cases onto the buggy and shouting farewells to Fraulein and to their friends, some of whom they would not see for another 6 weeks, the twins didn't notice that Wait was acting strangely. It was only later, when the horses were heading for home at twice their normal speed, that Sean asked,
"What's the hurry, Pa?"
"You'll see,"
said Wait, and both Garrick and Sean looked at him with sudden interest. It had been an idle question of Sean's, but Waite's answer had them immediately intrigued. Waite grinned at the bombardment of questions that kept his answers vague. He was enjoying himself. By the time they reached the Thunis Corral, the twins were in a frenzy of curiosity. Wait pulled the horses up in front of the house, and one of the grooms ran to take the reins. Ada was waiting on the veranda, and Sean jumped down and ran up the steps to her. He kissed her quickly.
"What's happening?" he pleaded. "Pa won't tell us, but we know it's something."
Garrick hurried up the steps also.
"Go on, tell us."
He caught hold of her arm and tugged it.
"I don't know what you're talking about," Ada laughed. "You'd better ask your father again."
Wait climbed up after them, put one arm around Ada's waist and squeezed her.
"I don't know where they got this idea from," said Wait. "But why not tell them to go and have a look in their bedroom? They might as well have their Christmas presents a bit early this year."
Sean beat Garrick to the lounge and was far in the lead by the time he reached the door of their bedroom.
"Wait for me," called Garrick desperately. "Please wait for me."
Sean stopped in the doorway.
"Jesus Christ," he whispered.
They were the strongest words he knew. Garrick came up behind him, and together they started at the pair of leather cases that lay on the table in the middle of the room. Long, flat cases, heavy polished leather with the corners bound in brass.
"Rifles," said Sean.
He walked slowly to the table, as though he were stalking the cases, expecting them at any moment to vanish.
"Look."
Sean reached out to touch with one finger the gold lettering stamped into the lid of the nearest case.
"Our names on them, even."
He sprung the locks and lifted the lid. In a nest of green baize, perfumed with gun oil, glistened a poem in steel and wood.
"Jesus Christ," said Sean again.
Then he looked over his shoulder at Garrick.
"Aren't you going to open yours?"
Garrick limped up to the table, trying to hide his disappointment. He had wanted a set of Dickens so badly. In the river, there were whirlpools. The last week of the Christmas holidays, and Garrick was in bed with one of his colds. Wade Courtney had gone to Peter Maritzburg for a meeting of the Beef Growers Association, and there was very little work to do on the farm that day. After Sean had dosed the sick cattle in the sanatorium paddock and ridden an inspection around the south section, he returned to the homestead and spent an hour talking to the stable boys. Then he drifted up to the house. Gary was asleep, and Ada was in the dairy making butter. He asked for and got an early lunch from Joseph, and ate it standing in the kitchen. While he ate, he thought over the problem of how to fill the afternoon. He weighed the alternatives carefully. Take the rifle and try for Dyker along the edge of the escarpment, or ride to the pools above the White Falls and fish for eels. He was still undecided after he had finished eating, so he crossed the yard and looked into the cool dimness of the dairy. Ada smiled at him across the churn.
"Hello, Sean. I suppose you want your lunch."
"Joseph gave it to me already, thanks, Ma."
"Joseph has already given it to me,"
corrected Ada mildly. Sean repeated it after her and sniffed the dairy smell. He liked the cheesy warmth of new butter and the tang of the cow dung smeared on the earth floor.
"What are you going to do this afternoon?"
"I came to ask you if you wanted venison or eels. I don't know if I want to go fishing or shooting."
"Eels would be nice. We could jelly them and have them for dinner tomorrow when your father comes home."
"I'll get you a bucketful." He saddled the pony, hung his tin of worms on the saddle, and with his pole over his shoulder, rode towards Ladyburg. He crossed the baboon-strewn bridge and turned off the road to follow the stream up to the falls. As he skirted the wattle plantation below the Van Essen's place, he realized he'd made a mistake in picking this route. Anna, with her skirts held up to her knees, came pelting out from among the trees. Sean kicked the pony into a trot and looked straight ahead.
"Sean! Hey, Sean!"
She was ahead of him, running to intercept him. There was no chance of evading her, so he stopped the pony.
"Hello, Sean."
She was panting, and her face was flushed. "Hello," he gruffed.
"Where are you going?"
"There and back to see how far it is."
"You're going fishing. May I come with you?"
She smiled appealingly. Her teeth were small and white. "No, you talk too much. You'll frighten the fish." He started the pony.
"Please, I'll be quiet. Honest, I will."
She was running next to him. "No." He flicked the reins and pulled away from her. He rode for 100 yards, then looked round. She was still following him, with her black hair streaming out behind her. He stopped the pony and she caught up with him.
"I knew you'd stop," she told him through her gasps.
"Will you go home? I don't want you following me."
"I'll be as quiet as anything. Honest, I will."
He knew she'd follow him right up to the top of the escarpment, and he gave in. "All right. But if you say a word, just one single word, I'll send you home."
"I promise. Help me up, please."
He dragged her onto the pony's rump, and she sat sideways with her arms around his waist. They climbed the escarpment. The path ran close beside the white falls, and they could feel the spray blowing off them, fine as mist. Anna kept her promise, until she was sure they'd gone too far for Sean to send her back alone. She started talking again. When she wanted an answer from him, which wasn't very often, she squeezed his waist, and Sean grunted. Sean knee-halted the pony and left him among the trees above the pools. He hid his saddle and bridle in an ant-bear hole. Then they walked down through the reeds to the water. Anna ran ahead of him, and when he came out to the sandbank, she was throwing pebbles into the pool.
"Hey, stop that! You'll frighten the fish," Sean shouted.
"Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot."
She sat down and wriggled her bare toes into the sand. Sean baited his hook and lobbed it out into the green water. The current drifted his float in a wide circle under the far bank, and they both watched it solemnly.
"It doesn't seem as though there are any fish here," Anna said.
"You've got to be patient. You can't expect to catch one right away."
Anna drew patterns in the sand with her toes, and 5 minutes passed slowly.
"Sean, shh."
Another 5 minutes.
"Fishing's a silly old thing."
"Nobody asked you to come," Sean told her.
"It's hot here."
Sean didn't answer. The high reed beds shut out any breeze, and the white sand threw the sun's heat back at them. Anna stood up and wandered restlessly across the sand to the edge of the reeds. She picked a handful of the long, spear-shaped leaves and plaited them together.
"I'm bored," she announced.
"Well, go home then."
"And I'm hot."
Sean pulled his line in, inspected the worms, and cast them out again. Anna stuck her tongue out at his back.
"Let's have a swim," she suggested.
Sean ignored her. He stuck the butt of his rod into the sand, pulled his hat down to shield his eyes from the glare, and leaned back on his elbows, with his legs stretched out in front of him. He could hear the sand crunching as she moved, and then there was another silence. He started to worry what she was doing, but if he looked around, it would be a show of weakness.
"Girls," he thought bitterly.
There was the sound of running feet just behind him. He sat up quickly and started to turn. Her white body flashed past him and hit the water with a smack, like a rising trout. Sean jumped up.
"Hey, what are you doing?"
"I'm swimming," laughed Anna, waist deep in green water, with her hair slicked wetly down her shoulders and over her breasts. Sean looked at those breasts, white as the flesh of an apple, and nippled in dark pink, almost red. Anna dropped onto her back and kicked the water white.
"Voit sack, little fishies! Scat, little fishies!" she gurgled. "Hey, you mustn't do that," Sean said half-heartedly.
He wanted her to stand up again. Those breasts gave him a strange, tight feeling in his stomach. But Anna knelt with the water up to her chin. He could see them through the water. He wanted her to stand up.
"It's lovely. Why don't you come in?"
She rolled on her stomach and ducked her head under the water. The twin ovals of her bottom broke the surface, and Sean's stomach tightened again.
"Are you coming in?"
she demanded, rubbing the water out of her eyes with both hands. Sean stood bewildered. Within a few seconds, his feelings towards her had undergone a major revolution. He wanted very much to be in the water with all those mysterious white bulges, but he was shy.
"You're scared. Come on. I give you guts to come in," she teased him.
The challenge pricked him. "I'm not scared."
"Well, come on then."
He hesitated a few seconds longer. Then he threw off his hat and unbuttoned his shirt. He turned his back on her while he dropped his pants, then spun round and dived into the pool, thankful for the cover it gave him. His head came out and Anna pushed it under again. He groped and caught her legs, straightened up and threw her on her back. He dragged her towards the shallows, where the water wouldn't cover her. She was thrashing her arms to keep her head out and screaming delightedly. Sean's heels snagged a rock and he fell, letting go of her. Before he could recover, she had leapt on him and straddled his back. He could have thrown her off, but he liked the feel of her flesh on his, warm through the cool water, slippery with wetness. She picked up a handful of sand and rubbed it into his hair. Sean struggled gently. She threw her arms round his neck, and he could feel the whole length of her body along his back. The tightness in his stomach moved up into his chest, and he wanted to hold her. He rolled over and reached for her, but she twisted out of his hands and dived back into the deep again. Sean splashed after her, but she kept out of his reach, laughing at him. At last they faced each other, still chin deep, and Sean was getting angry. He wanted to hold her. She saw the change of his mood, and she waded to the bank, walked to his clothes, and picked up his shirt. She dried her face on it, standing naked and unashamed. She had too many brothers for modesty. Sean watched the way her breasts changed shape as she lifted her arms. He looked at the lines of her body and saw that her once skinny legs had filled out. Her thighs touched each other all the way up to the base of her belly, and there she wore the dark triangular badge of womanhood. She spread the shirt out on the sand and sat down upon it. Then she looked at him.
"Are you coming out?"
He came out awkwardly, covering himself with his hands. Anna moved over on the shirt.
"You can sit down if you like."
He sat hurriedly and drew his knees up under his chin. He watched her from the corner of his eye. There were little goose pimples around her nipples from the cold water. She was aware that he was watching her, and she pulled back her shoulders, enjoying it. Sean felt bewildered again. She was so clearly in control now. Before, she had been someone to growl at, but now she was giving orders, and he was obeying.
"You got hairs on your chest," Anna said, turning to look at him.
Sparse and silky though they were, Sean was glad that he had them. He straightened out his legs.
"And you're much bigger there than Fricky."
Sean tried to pull up his knees again, but she put her hand on his leg and stopped him.
"Can I touch you?"
Sean tried to speak, but his throat had closed and no sound came through it. Anna didn't wait for an answer.
"Oh, look, it's getting all cheeky, just like Caribou's."
Caribou was Mr. Van Essen's stallion.
"I always know when Pa's going to let Caribou serve as a mare. He tells me to go and visit Aunt Letty. I just hide in the plantation. You can see the paddock jolly well from the plantation."
Anna's hand was soft and restless. Sean could think of nothing else.
"Do you know that people serve us just like horses do?" she asked.
Sean nodded. He had attended the biology classes conducted by Messrs. Daffel and Company in the school latrines. They were quiet for a while. Then Anna whispered,
"Sean, would you like to service me?"
"I don't know how," croaked Sean.
"I bet horses don't know the first time either. Nor people for that matter," Anna said. "We could find out."
They rode home in the early evening, Anna sitting up behind Sean, her arms tight round his waist, and the side of her face pressed between his shoulders. He dropped her at the back of the plantation.
"I'll see you at school on Monday," she said, and turned to go.
"Anna?"
"Yes?"
"Is it still sore?"
"No."
And then, after a moment's thought,
"It feels nice."
She turned and ran into the wattle trees. Sean rode home slowly. He was empty inside. It was a sad feeling, and it puzzled him.
"Where are the fish?"
asked Ada. "They weren't biting."
"Not even one?"
Sean shook his head and crossed the kitchen. "Sean?"
"Yes, Ma?"
"Is something wrong?"
"No."
Quick denial.
"No, I'm fine."
He slipped into the passage. Garrick was sitting up in bed. The skin around his nostrils was inflamed and chapped. He lowered the book he was reading and smiled at Sean as he came into the room. Sean went to his own bed and sat on it.
"Where have you been?"
Garrick's voice was thick with cold. "Up at the pools, above the falls."
"Fishing?"
Sean didn't answer. He leaned forward on the bed with his elbows on his knees.
"I met Anna.
She came with me." Garrick's interest quickened at the mention of her name, and he watched Sean's face. Sean still had that slightly puzzled expression.
"Gary."
He hesitated. He had to talk about it.
"Gary, I screwed Anna."
Garrick drew in his breath with a small hiss. He went very pale. Only his nose was still red and sore-looking.
"I mean,"
Sean spoke slowly, as though he were trying to explain it to himself,
"I mean, really screwed her. Just like we've talked about. Just like..."
He made a helpless gesture with his hands, unable to find the words. Then he lay back on the bed.
"Did she let you?"
Garrick's voice was almost a whisper.
"She asked me to," Sean said. "It was slippery, sort of warm and slippery."
And then later, long after the lamp was out and they were both in bed, Sean heard Garrick's soft movements in the darkness. He listened for a while until he was certain.
"Gary,"
he accused him loudly.
"I wasn't. I wasn't.
You know what Pa told us. Your teeth will fall out and you'll go mad.
I wasn't.
Garrick's voice was choked with his cold and his tears.
I heard you, said Sean.
I was just scratching my leg. Honestly, I was.
And at the end, the river plunged over the last waterfall and swept them into the sea of manhood. Mr. Clark had not been able to break Sean. He had provoked instead a bitter contest in which he knew himself to be slowly losing ground, and now he was afraid of Sean. He no longer made Sean stand, for Sean was as tall as he was. The contest had been going on for 2 years. They had explored each other's weaknesses and knew how to exploit them. Mr. Clark could not bear the sound of anyone sniffing. Perhaps subconsciously he took it as mockery of his own deformed nose. Sean had a repertoire that varied from a barely audible connoisseur testing the bouquet of brandy sniff to a loud hawking in the back of his throat.
"Sorry, sir, I can't help it. I got a bit of a cold."
But then, to even the score, Mr. Clark had realized that Sean was vulnerable through Garrick. Hurt Garrick even a little, and you were inflicting almost unbearable agony on Sean. It had been a bad week for Mr. Clark. His liver, weakened by persistent bouts of malaria, had been troubling him. He had suffered with a bilious headache for 3 days now. There had been unpleasantness with the town council about the terms on which his contract was to be renewed. Sean had been in good sniffing form the day before, and Mr. Clark had had about as much as he was prepared to take. He came into the schoolroom and took his place on the dais. He let his eyes move slowly over his pupils until he came to Sean.
"Just let him start," thought Mr. Clark. "Just let him start today and I'll kill him."
The seating had been rearranged in the last 2 years. Sean and Garrick had been separated, and Garrick was now at the front of the room, where Mr. Clark could reach him easily. Sean was near the back.
"English readers," said Mr. Clark, "standard ones, turn to page 5. Standard twos, turn to..."
Garrick sniffed wetly, hay fever again. Mr. Clark shut his book with a snap.
"Damn you," he said softly, and then, his voice rising, "damn you!"
Now he was shaking with rage. The edges of his nostrils were white and flared open. He came down from the dais to Garrick's desk.
Damn you, you bloody little cripple!" he screamed,
and hit Garrick across the face with his open hand. Garrick cupped both hands over his cheek and stared at him.
"You dirty little swine," Mr. Clark mouthed at him. "Now you're starting it too."
He caught a handful of Garrick's hair and pulled his head down so that his forehead hit the top of the desk.
"I'll teach you. By God, I'll teach you. I'll show you, bump. I'll show you, bump."
It took Sean that long to reach them. He grabbed Mr. Clark's arm and pulled him backwards.
"Leave him alone. He didn't do anything."
Mr. Clark saw Sean's face in front of him. He was past all reason. The face that had tormented him for 2 long years. He bunched his fist and lashed out at it. Sean staggered back from the blow. The sting of it made his eyes water. For a second he lay sprawled across one of the desks, watching Clark, and then he growled. The sound sobered Clark. He backed away, but only 2 paces before Sean was on him. Hitting with both hands, grunting with each punch, Sean drove him against the blackboard. Clark tried to break away, but Sean caught the collar of his shirt and dragged him back. The collar tore half loose in his hand, and Sean hit him again. Clark slid down the wall until he was sitting against it, and Sean stood panting over him.
"Get out," said Clark.
His teeth
were stained pink by the blood in his mouth, and a little of it spilled out onto his lips. His collar stood up at a jaunty angle under one ear. There was no sound in the room except Sean's breathing.
"Get out!" said Clark again.
And the anger drained out of Sean, leaving him trembling with reaction. He walked to the door.
"You too,"
Clark pointed at Garrick. "Get out and don't come back."
"Come on, Gary," said Sean.
Garrick stood up from his desk and limped across to Sean, and together they went out into the schoolyard.
"What are we going to do now?"
There was a big red lump on Garrick's forehead.
"I suppose we'd better go home."
"What about our things?" asked Garrick.
"We can't carry all that. We'll have to send for them later. Come on."
They walked out through the town and along the road to the farm. They'd almost reached the bridge on the Baboon Stream before either of them spoke again.
"What do you reckon Pa will do?"
asked Garrick. He was only putting into words the problem that had occupied them both since they left the school.
"Well, whatever he does, it was worth it," Sean grinned.
"Did you see me clobber him, eh? Smackaroo, right in the chops." "Oh, you shouldn't have done it, Sean. Pa's going to kill us." "Me too, and I didn't do anything."
"You sniffed," Sean reminded him.
They reached the bridge and leaned over the parapet side by side to watch the water.
"How's your leg?" asked Sean.
"It's sore. I think we should rest a bit."
"All right, if you say so," Sean agreed.
There was a long silence, then...
"I wish you hadn't done it, Sean."
"Well, wishing isn't going to help. Old Noseholes is as punched up as he'll ever be, and all we can do is think of something to tell Pa."
"He hit me," said Garrick. "He might have killed me."
"Yes," agreed Sean righteously. "And he hit me too."
They thought about it for a while.
"Perhaps we should just go away," suggested Garrick.
"You mean without telling Pa?" The idea had attraction.
"Yeah, we could go to sea or something."
Garrick brightened.
"You'd get seasick. You even get sick in a train."
Once more they applied their minds to the problem. Then Sean looked at Garrick. Garrick looked at Sean, and as though by agreement, they straightened up and started off once more for Thesunus Corral. Ada was in the front of the house. She had on a wide-brimmed straw hat that kept her face in shadow, and over one arm she carried a basket of flowers. Busy with her garden, she didn't notice them until they were halfway across the lawn, and when she did, she stood motionless. She was steeling herself, trying to get her emotions under control. From experience, she had learned to expect the worst from her stepsons and be thankful when it wasn't as bad as that. As they came towards her, they lost momentum and finally halted, like a pair of clockwork toys running down.
"Hello,"
said Ada.
"Hello,"
they answered together. Garrick fumbled in his pocket, drew out a handkerchief and blew his nose. Sean stared up at the steep Dutch gabled roof of the Thunis Corral as though he had never seen it before.
"Yes?" Ada kept her voice calm.
"Mr. Clark said we were to go home," announced Garrick. "Why?"
Ada's calm was starting to crack.
"Well..."
Garrick glanced at Sean for support. Sean's attention was still riveted on the roof.
"Well, you see, Sean sort of punched him in the head until he fell down. I didn't do anything."
Ada moaned softly.
"Oh, no."
She took a deep breath.
"All right, start at the beginning and give me the whole story."
They told it in relays, a garbled rush of words, interrupting each other and arguing over the details. When they had finished, Ada said,
"You'd better go to your room."
Your father's working in the home section today, and he'll be back for his lunch soon. I'll try and prepare him a little." The room had the cheery atmosphere of a condemned cell.
"How much do you reckon he'll give us?"
asked Garrick.
"I reckon until he gets tired, then he'll rest and give us some more,"
Sean answered. They heard Waite's horse come into the yard. He said something to the stable boy, and they heard him laugh. The kitchen door slammed, and there was half a minute of suspense before they heard Waite roar. Garrick jumped nervously. For another 10 minutes they could hear Waite and Ada talking in the kitchen, the alternate rumble and soothing murmur, then the tap of Ada's feet along the passage. She came into the room.
"Your father wants to see you. He's in the study."
Waite stood in front of the fireplace. His beard was powdered with dust, and his forehead as corrugated as a ploughed land with the force of his scowl.
"Come in,"
he bellowed, when Sean knocked, and they filed in and stood in front of him. Waite slapped his riding whip against his leg, and the dust puffed out of his breeches.
"Come here," he said to Garrick, and took a handful of his hair.
He twisted Garrick's face up and looked at the bruise on his forehead.
"Hmm,"
he said. He let go of Garrick's hair and stood up in a tuft. He threw the riding whip on the stinkwood desk.
"Come here," he said to Sean. "Hold out your hands." "No, palms down."
The skin on both hands was broken, and one knuckle was swollen and puffy-looking.
"Mmm," he said again.
He turned to the shelf beside the fireplace, took a pipe out of the rack and filled it from the stone jar of tobacco.
"You're a pair of bloody fools," he said. "But I'd take a chance and start you on 5 shillings a week all found. Go and get your lunch. We've got work to do this afternoon."
They stared at him a moment in disbelief, then back towards the door.
"Sean."
Sean stopped. He knew it was too good to be true.
"Where did you hit him?"
"All over, Pa. Anywhere I could reach."
"That's no good," Waite said. "You must go for the side of his head. Here."
He tapped the point of his jaw with his pipe.
"And keep your fists closed tight, or you'll break every finger in your hands before you're much older."
"Yes, Pa."
The door closed quietly behind him, and Waite allowed himself to grin.
"They've had enough book learning anyway," he said aloud, and struck a match to his pipe.
When it was drawing evenly, he blew out smoke.
"Christ, I wish I could have watched it. That little pen-pusher will know better than to tangle with my boy again."